I am looking at a photo right now on my phone, a photo that I took this past Saturday at a conference that I went to with my son. In it features five young men who are sitting in the back of a college classroom in a very devil may care kind of pose. They're sitting back on the chairs, they're leaning as far back as they could, their hands are behind their heads. And I think they do it because A, it's comfortable, and B, I think they it's cool, and C, more than anything, they're not in a place where they really want to be, but they're kind of forced to be there. And I think the reason why I took it is because I identified with them. I'm 40 years old, but for whatever reason, I have the emotional memory of an elephant. And so I can recall vividly being 16, 17, 18 years old and aware that I was going to enter the quote unquote adult world and that I wasn't prepared for it. And so I acted out in an overly confident way because I didn't want anybody to know how scared I was. And so I was sitting on this workshop, and these young men happened to be there. And I turn around, and they happen to be in that very classic pose. And being the photographer, I decided to snap it. I haven't shared it in social media because I believe in the fact that people should have their own if they wanted it out there, they would have posted. But we were in a sharing space, and it doesn't seem fair for me to post or share anything, that they wouldn't want out there themselves. We were in a safe space. I need to respect it. But I took it for my files because I wanted to reference it back when I talked to you guys today. See, in this workshop, and then I went to a series with them. It was actually the only one where my son and I separated. He went to go check one out on how to make homework, be tasty or something like pizza. I forget what the name of the title exactly was, but I went to this one because to this workshop because the title, I think it's From Hoodie to Hooded, caught me, and I wanted to just kind of see the experience of the young man that was supposed to present. His name is Devin. I forget the last name. We all make real quick snap judgments. And as I walk into the room, there's this beautiful young man standing in front of us. He's going to be the person directing this talk. And he is extremely well groomed. Obviously, takes very good care of himself physically. His clothes are nicely pressed. His jeans are crisp, and black, no stains on them. His shoes are immaculate. I mean, he is model-like, for lack of a better term. And so, it's kind of it's a guy that's not easy to miss. He presents himself very well, but he had those Mario Lopez dimples that great girls are crazy about. So you could tell just from the get-go, you could make a lot of assumptions. Pretty boy is probably what I thought first, but I try not to be a hater, and at the end of the and I'm always respectful of the people that are in the front of directing others or leading these kinds of talks because it's not an easy thing to do. And so I sat down quietly, and as the workshop started going, I began to take a toll, or I started to notice who was coming in, and it was a bunch of 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. Also, to point that this conference that I went to, the Adelante Young Men's Conference, is primarily focused for on Latino children, on Latino young men. So there was a lot of Garcias, a lot of Ramirez's, a lot of Torres's, a lot, there were a lot of brown people in the crowd. And some of them were rough around the edges. Let's not kid ourselves here. Some of these boys are at that crossroads where they can, depending on the choices that they make here within the next year or so, it's really going to make a difference in which path, they're going to go on. And I hope the best for everyone, of course, but I know the statistics, and some of these boys do not have a bright future ahead of them, and that's very sad. So anyway, so I'm sitting there and I'm watching, you know, Devin lead the discussion. And he's telling us his story from being a young man in Pacoima, California, in not a very well-known and not a very well-to-do kind of town. And he himself having issues after a divorce that his parents went through and just getting into trouble and really not, just not having a good footing on life and then making the bad decision after bad decision, you know, in middle school and then in high school and whatnot. And then, but of course, he's turned it around because now he's here leading the talk. And as he kept on going with his story, he was inspiring. That's the only way that I can describe it. He inspired me because here's a young man who is several years my junior, but who has led a very interesting life and has climbed some serious mountains. And now he's back trying to change, you know, the Hispanic community, the Latino community, and give hope or show that there is hope out there for young people. And I find that that's one of the coolest things that you can do. And so when he was done with his story, he wanted to open up the conversation and he wanted everybody to have an opportunity to talk if they could. And so he handed out a sheet of paper with two, and there were two questions. And the first one was, what are you most afraid of, you know, after high school? And then I forgot the second one. And honestly, we didn't have enough time to discuss it because the talk ran long. What are you most afraid of after high school? So we took 2 to 3 minutes to write down our little bits. I did it too. I didn't feel that I shouldn't be part of the conversation. I jotted it down and I turned it back into the person leading the discussion, Devin. And then he asked us to share. And of course, all of the guys went into their corners. They crossed their arms. They started fidgeting. Nobody wanted to share. And I got to say that the Devin didn't let up. He said, come on, now let's, somebody share, somebody share, somebody share. Until eventually one of the young men broke. And he said, I'm just afraid that some people are going to find out about my past. Devin pressed him on it a little bit more. But the young man said, I really don't want to go into it more. But it's just a real worry of mine that as I go forward in life, that they're going to find out about my past and that's going to stop me from doing things. And so Devin thanked him for that. And then he kept on looking around the room. And I found myself at that place where nobody wants to hear from a pudgy 40-year-old man, right? This conversation is for them. They're supposed to find things out about themselves. They're supposed to, think things through. This is not about me, it's about them. But since they're not sharing, I feel that maybe if I say something, that it will, that they'll feel that it's okay to open up. And so I turned around to the rest of the group, even to the five boys that were sitting in the back featured in my photo here. And I told them my story. I told them about what I was afraid. And it went something like this. I was afraid back when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, right before high school graduation from Garfield High, go Bulldogs. I was afraid that everybody would know that I was poor. We were not well-off people. My parents were terrific, but they were first-generation immigrants who had very simple jobs. We were a family of five. And money was just always tight. My shoes always came from Payless Shoe Source. My mother would really rag on me because I went through them like nobody's business. I played a lot of basketball, a lot of hardtop basketball back in the day. And my shoes wouldn't last longer than 2 to 3 months. I just wore them through. But I loved the game. But she always gave me a hard time about how expensive the shoes were. And these were Payless Shoe Source shoes. it was hard, but we were always fed. To be honest with you, I never knew that I was poor until high school. Prior to that, I just thought everybody was this way. It wasn't until I started hanging out with some kids that whose parents were of relative means that I found out that I was a poor kid. Or when I started watching the television shows that featured high school kids, like 90210, that I realized, we're poor, man. But when it came to college, I was really afraid that A, I was not going to get to go, and B, once I got there, that I was not going to be able to afford the 4 years that it would take for me to get any kind of degree. For the record, as an aside, it took me 8 years to graduate college because I actually ended up partying way too hard. But that's another story for a different day. So I told him, I was afraid that I would be considered poor. I was also afraid that I was going to fail. Nobody in my family prior to myself had ever gone to college, and definitely nobody had ever graduated. My parents both are extremely, my dad's no longer with us, but they were extremely smart people, but they did not have education past elementary. And so it was a big deal that I graduated high school, and it was a bigger deal that I got accepted into any college, but I did not know if I had the chops to make it there. I knew I was smart, but this was college, Cal State LA, Golden Eagles. I didn't know that I would be survive. I didn't, or that I would make it through there, that I would actually survive the 4 years that it took to get a degree. So I told them that there were days that it got so bad being poor in college that I would hang out until very late because I didn't want to go home. I love the college experience. I love being on campus, and I used to wait in the computer lab until late, just using the internet, which was relatively new back then. I'll admit I looked at a little bit of porn on campus. I'm not proud of it, but hey, I was a 17, 18-year-old kid with, internet. I was going to look at stuff. And then there was some actual schoolwork that I needed to be done. But I would get out of the computer lab, and then I would go to the dumpsters behind the student union, and I would find food. A lot of times, kids just throw stuff away. And I told them, even at the day of the conference, because this was the last one, so we had just come to lunch, there was so much food just was being tossed into the trash bins. And for me, that was a source of nourishment. I would go to the dumpsters and I would, rifle through the bags and open them up and see if I could find maybe an apple that wasn't eaten. Or it was a whole, or sometimes there were whole apples in there, or full whole oranges. Or there were just things that were half eaten, a trace of hamburgers and hamburgers and fries, and maybe some of the fries were still good, and I ate those. I must have some kind of stomach because I never got sick. I never had any kind of problems with that. But that it was not, those were hard days. And then, I told them the story of how the first time that I came to visit my girlfriend, or actually, we were going to go on a first date, and this girl tells me, hey, this is where I live, and I had never been into, Monrovia, California, and then I drive up the street to where she lives, and it looks like Bel Air, and I'm driving my dad's beat-up old Econoline with the windows busted out in the back, and the thought going through my mind of, they're going to think I'm the gardener, because that's exactly what I look like. And then looking around the neighborhood, that's my neighborhood now, and thinking, man, this must be really nice. This is what wealthy people are like. But, I don't know that this girl's going to like me. I'm not from a place like this. And gosh, wouldn't it be nice to live in a place like that, like this? But let's be real. That doesn't happen to guys from Boyle Heights. And then, you fast forward several years, and the first school that I passed on my way to pick up my date, that's where my children go to school, and that's where I am part of the PTA, and where I took them to an astronomy class yesterday, and I'm a big part of you know, of the culture of the campus, or that I get to wake up every single morning and I get to look at our beautiful foothills here in Monrovia and realize that I owned this place and that I own part of that view and that I get to enjoy it and not take it for granted. And then as I was telling my story, I realized that there were many of them, not all, but many of them were hanging on to my every word. And when I finished, they clamped, which broke me out of a spell because I actually thought I was being quite boring. And I guess it resonated to some degree. But that's not the cool part about that workshop. My story is my story, and I'm proud of it, and I'm happy to share it. But the cool thing was that then the rest of them began talking, began sharing. One of them said, I'm afraid that I don't know how to deal with my depression, that I get down on myself sometimes and I don't know how to get out of it and I don't have anybody to talk to. Another boy said that he was also just poor and he did not know how to get out of that. Another boy talked about how he wasn't necessarily afraid for himself, but he was afraid for his parents because they were not documented and that he did not know, you know, with the way things were going, you know, what was going to happen to them. One of them said that he was afraid of staying in his neighborhood because he knows it's not very good, but he doesn't see a way out and that he's afraid for his brothers and his sisters who live there. I mean, no joke, I teared up several times as these boys talk because their challenges are real. And they have not ever, I don't think, been told it's okay to speak about this. You have, you know, you have permission to hurt and tell your story and then look for answers and seek out resources. Yeah, and also there's that whole component of, well, we're men. We got to be hard, right? We don't cry. We don't, you know, that pussy shit, right? You just buck up, you know. You just keep on moving. The young men in the photo. It's interesting because one of them shared, and his English was not very good. It was, for lack of a better term, cholo-ish. But he was trying to get something out. He was trying to get something out. And I'm glad that the person who led the discussion gave him enough time to describe his woes. And his buddies around him, they're nervous too. Because their friend is having a real moment and they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to cope with it. I wish that my son had been there with me. He had, like I said, he went to another workshop, and that's all right. He can't be exposed to all of these things. But I wish he had seen that. But, you know, we're conduits for information, so I'm sure there'll be other opportunities. But I wish he had seen that he lives within a family where he has, his mom and I are building a safe space, and I know that's taboo, like, oh, you know, but that he has a safe space to just talk it out, hug it out, cry it out, whatever, because it's needed. There's a lot of hurt in the world, and specifically for young men, like my basketball team today, who I gave them a big old lecture about, you know, running their mouth. It's not easy to find the right words. I know I struggle with it. I'm sorry for you guys, because you guys who listen to tune in, you're probably thinking all the time, like, make some fucking sense, Hugo. But the reality is, for me, that I got very lucky that I found a partner who I can have conversations with, who I can cry in front of, who I can laugh and make her laugh and have these wonderful moments together, in that I'm helping raise children who have an emotional intelligence about them because we've instilled that. And I would hope more parents would do that too. And I think they do. I mean, I will say this about my friends as we talk about things, is that we are having conversations with our children and that we're not making the mistake of being stopgaps, like we said. It's funny, the other thing that came out of it is that my son found out that he's Latino. We were sitting in the conference, everything in this big hall, and the speakers were just about to go on, and I was reading about, you know, and planning out the day and what workshops we were going to go to. And all of a sudden, I realized, oh, okay, this is for Latino people. And so I go over to my son, I said, so, what's your feelings on being Latino? And he looks over at me and says, I'm what? I said, you're Latino. Oh, yeah, I guess I've never thought about it. I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. You didn't know that? Your last name is Torres. But I guess that's not a big, you know, we're here at home, we're just who we are. We don't put a lot of emphasis on that. I think more than anything, we worry about them being kind, mindful, well-intentioned folk. Not one, you know, not a label. You know, I'm very, when it comes to all of that sort of thing, like I don't try to put them in boxes. It's not like, oh, your sister does this because she's a girl, or you do this because you're a boy. No, they do what they do because they're supposed to help the family out, and they're supposed to do the household work. Now, my son is older, so he does certain things because he's got the height and he's got the mobility to do so. But not because he's a boy; it's just because it's the better use of his skills. And there'll be a day where she will have to do that kind of those tasks. I'm very proud of the fact that my son is a fantastic cook. That will help him out in life immensely. But, you know, and he's taken to it, and he's very good at it, and I'm proud of that. And we champion that for him if he wants to continue on with that. My daughter is a terrific public speaker. She was asked to speak in front of our school board this afternoon, and she's working on her speech here that she'll present. Nothing big, but you know, it's not easy to go in front of a few hundred people and talk. It's not the first time that she's done it either. It's not because she wears blue or he wears pink or any of that, or pink rooms and blue rooms. It's about the fact that, you know, you have a talent, your sex, your sexual orientation, your color, it shouldn't impede you from doing it. I'm going to obviously erase that photo because I don't plan to post it. But I'm glad that I got to share the experience with you guys. I'm glad that I got to tell you about how nice it is to hear from young people when they're succeeding, but also when they're hurting. Because a lot of the times we complain about the youth or these fucking millennials. But they're going through stuff. But they are living with the consequences of the actions that my generation and the generations before me took. And then we bitch about them, and that seems unfair. Yes, like all generations, they have their foibles too. There's a lot of good things about young people, and more than anything, it behooves us, those of us who are progressive and want good things for the future, to give them the opportunity to talk and to listen to their stories and be there for them, to help shepherd them through life if we can. Don't tear them down. Lift them up. Peace.